I have many challenges and they're mostly mentally driven because there's so much to think about. There's family, there's life, there's personal finances, there's your business, there's the demands of the job. I have people I'm responsible in my day job, but I decided that I'm just not going to make excuses. And really what helps is knowing people like you and people that are in the business that have their own story and they've overcome those same challenges.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Rodney Robinson manages his personal rentals while growing a multifamily investment business, Robinson Capital, and he seeks to help others learn to invest as well. Rodney, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam. Super glad to be here.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. There's three questions I ask everybody who comes to the show. Can you, in 90 seconds or less, tell us where you started, where you are now, and how you got there?
Yeah, thank you. So just like many of your listeners, I'm a working professional. I've been a working professional for the last decade. I have always wanted to invest in real estate. In 2013, I decided I was going to do some learning. It wasn't until 2016 that we bought our first primary residence, and that ended up being our second rental, because in 2019, we bought our first rental, fixed it up, and we basically felt like real estate investors. What I learned during that process was I don't want to buy any more single families. I want to scale. And I, in July of 2020, decided that I was going to focus on multifamily. So where I am is I have a platform, which is a blog, has about 240 articles that I've written on the subject of multifamily investing, passive investing, what it looks like for working professionals to invest. And I've been working on networking, meeting other partners, finding deals. And in 2022, we expect to have our first apartment syndication done. Not long ago, I did my first passive investment so that I can, you know, understand the passive investor journey and be able to speak to passive investors also. So I just like educating working professionals on what it looks like to be a passive investor, and very excited to see, you know, what Robinson Capital can do for communities and for our investors.
Why did you start out? I mean, that's a lot of content. You know, it's one of the things that everybody, especially on the active investor side, it is educating your investors, educating other real estate investors. Like, why did you start out, or how? Maybe more the question. 240 articles is a lot. That's a lot of stuff to write. That's a lot of content to put out there. How did you figure out what to put out? And then what was your kind of thinking behind that?
Yeah, so that's over the course of a year and a half. I mean, the first step for me was to get started. And I knew that if I started writing, I'd be forced to get educated. And when I run out of content, that means I run out of education. So I listen to podcasts, I read other blogs, I network, and I keep a notepad in my phone of all the different topics we could talk about. Anything from underwriting, conservative underwriting, what it looks like to invest in today's market, what I'm learning, tours that I've done, to, you know, just simple mindset things such as, you know, buying assets versus liabilities and what real assets are, which are income producing. So anyway, it was just over time. And now those are incrementally released on my blog twice a week. But to answer your question, the point was to position myself as what we call a thought leader. So similar to your platform, which is a podcast, I wanted to do a blog, which is more suited for my skills right now and my availability being a working professional. So I just chose it and stuck with it. And it's one of the few things I've actually stuck with without, you know, losing interest over the last year and a half.
Right, man, that's great. How have you made, because I mean, a blog is one thing, but what have been some ways that you've generated eyeballs on that blog?
Yeah, so the blog, because of the content, has done a good job over time of developing organic traffic, which is awesome. So about half of the traffic comes through search. And that could be a testament to how well the content's written or how poorly I'm doing my social media marketing. So the other part, and which is primarily what I've been doing, is sharing twice a week on social media, primarily through LinkedIn, which is where my target audience is. And those are, you know, working professionals just like myself. And then also through Instagram, and then more through my personal network on Facebook. But I think what happened was I'm still trying to learn where everyone's coming from. But what happened was the content itself is what drove the traffic. And now, you know, I could slow down or I could take a break and the traffic is coming and they're viewing the content. And I have a funnel to add passive investors to the list. And we try to, you know, go deep versus go broad. And what I mean by that is I want to develop solid relationships with my network and not focus specifically on the quantity of the network, people in the network.
Right. Yeah. Far better to have five amazing people in your network that are, you know, qualified to help you take down deals than 500 that are just, you know, along for the ride.
But right.
Able to contribute
right.
So
yeah,
that's fantastic. Talk to us about the passive investor mindset. We kind of talked about before we kicked this show off. What does that mean to you? Can you kind of just explain that to us?
I'll start very simply with what, you know, probably the challenge of the middle class mindset is today. And it's probably, you know, something not everyone would agree with, but I think especially now with all this extra money and circulation, we all feel richer. You know, I would consider myself middle class, upper middle class. So what I learned is that, you know, the middle class last year spent much more than they had what was typical on discretionary items, furnishings for the house, entertainment, things like that. And I get it. It was a rough year, 2020. And it kind of alarms me because we already have a problem with buying liabilities. But, you know, there's a concern about the wealth of the rich getting greater and then, you know, the poor getting poorer. And that's part of what drives it. And I really want to help people. So I want to help people just like myself that have jobs. Hopefully they're not working paycheck to paycheck. And the mindset of a passive investor says, I'm going to delay, you know, today's instant gratification, and I'm going to put this extra money I have to work. So it's working harder than me because, you know, we're all working really hard for our day jobs. So the benefits of passive income versus earned income, the compounding power of, you know, your investment over time. And I became a passive investor so I could show that and demonstrate that and really get behind it.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fantastic. How did you select the first investment you put money in?
Well, it starts with the person. And this is very simple. I knew someone, you know, when I started this journey and, you know, 2020, I went to a conference. From that conference, I developed so many relationships and I chose a few people that I was going to follow. This person's become more like a mentor to me. And we speak a few times a month, every month. And we've been doing that since I started this journey. He ended up creating a fund and wanted to share it with me. And from that point, I said, this would be great because the fund is a multifamily fund, which is what I'm, you know, that's the asset class that I'm focusing on. And the returns look decent. And most importantly, I trust him. I know of his track record. And that was, you know, how I selected my first passive investment. And that's actually something I talk about. Start with the who, people you know and trust, because that's the biggest determinant of success and also the piece of putting your money to work with someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. What have been some challenges? You know, you've been at this, you said, since July of 2020.
Yeah.
What have been some challenges, you know, that you've faced in kind of ramping up, especially as a full-time, you've got kids at home, you know, you're working a full-time job. What are some challenges that you've faced in getting ramped up? And then what are maybe some things that you would do differently if you could rewind it 16, 18?
Yeah. Well, I'd say challenges, simply put, you know, like you said, I'm like a lot of people. I have children, I'm working a job, and I have a dream. And when you have your network, I call it the real life network. Those are the people that you just see where, you know, they may not have the same mindset. So when you tell them you're working on a real estate business, you know, they call it your hobby or your side gig or something like that. You know, I was like, let me stop proving to people, you know, what I'm doing. I need to prove to myself. So I broke time apart in my day. I get up at 4 a.m. on a good day. You know, I'm trying to keep it going. But 4 a.m. is my target awake time, and I start working on the business. I have a morning routine that includes other things, you know, reading, writing, prayer, but working on the business is a big part of it. That's what I've done to overcome. But, you know, I have many challenges, and they're mostly mentally driven because there's so much to think about. There's family, there's life, there's personal finances, there's your business, there's the demands of the job. I have people I'm responsible in my day job. But I decided that I'm just not going to make excuses. And really what helps is knowing people like you and people that are in the business that have their own story and they've overcome those same challenges.
Yeah, man, it is really motivating when you hear where other people have come from. I love that. You're like, oh, wait, you did this. You figured it out. Well, if he can figure it out, I can figure it out too. And that's the beauty of real estate in general.
Right.
It's one of those rare industries, I think, where there's not a whole lot of secrets. Like nobody's reinventing the wheel here. Nobody's doing anything that's like, oh, this is, you know, there's some nuance. There's some tricks of the trade, but there's some pretty well trodden paths. I think you can definitely follow in some other people's footsteps. So
I agree.
Absolutely fantastic. Tell me, you know, you talked a little bit about how you invested with somebody you know, like, and trust. And that's a great first passive investor step. The thing I always say is the second passive investor step is once you know the team, then you need to vet the market, right?
Correct.
So
correct.
How are you as an investor vetting what markets you are interested in?
Very simply, population growth. There has to be population growth and a demand for housing in the area. So population growth, you know, the way I see it is evidence of other leading indicators that you want to be looking at. So simply put, there needs to be, you know, growth of the population, but what drives that? That's jobs and job diversity. So, you know, I'm looking in areas where, you know, there's, you know, an MSA of 250,000 or greater. And this criteria is, you know, pretty much, you know, what a lot of people, and I've kind of copied other people's criteria, but 250 or greater. There's population growth driven by jobs, but jobs that are, you know, broad from different industries and different companies. That way you protect against the unforeseen, you know, shutdown or, you know, different things that can really kill the demand in that area. And then, you know, based on hopefully the primary markets are based on my expertise in the area. So I'm in Central Florida. I want to be able to, you know, have a connection with the area. I want to have my own stories and understanding of the market. So generally my criteria is the Southeast because I know that people are moving to the Southeast. I know that, you know, especially in these warmer climates and some of these other, you know, cities that are outside of a lot of the larger cities, people are choosing to live in, you know, these areas, and they're moving outward from those super high demand areas in the outskirts of Orlando or other major cities like Jacksonville.
Yeah. Does it give you any concern, which I don't know how, I mean, I would imagine Jacksonville is much larger than 250,000, but I don't know. Does it give you any concern when the threshold is that low? I'm asking here because I would have thought you just said, hey, you know, it's a million plus or whatever it is. Tell me why you keep that number at 250. Is there an opportunity at that lower number maybe that we're not seeing in other larger areas?
Yeah, because I like emerging markets. And what I plan to spend a lot more of my time on is looking at data that helps me point out emerging markets. And emerging markets can be smaller and, you know, they're driven by certain aspects that, you know, people start to identify that in their lifestyle or where they want to live that make it attractive there. And, you know, some of these cities are, they happen to be smaller cities, but they have great fundamentals. They have jobs, they have job diversity, they have, you know, safe, comfortable living, and a lot of families, young families, are looking for that.
Right. That makes a heck of a lot of sense. That's fantastic. Rodney, what else would you like to share with our listeners here before we jump into the final four? Is there kind of some closing thoughts, some things maybe as you think about your journey that you'd say, hey, this is something that's been valuable to me as I have made this progress or made this journey? I'd love to share that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, they want to know what the first thing or the next thing they should do in order to understand how to invest or, you know, what to consider to be a passive investor. I mean, I have a few books I'd recommend, and I'd probably say a good one. I hate to be like everyone else, but really a good one, and I'll make a second one, is Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And you probably knew I was going to say that. And the second one is Cash Flow Quadrants by Robert Kiyosaki. And I think that one probably had the biggest impact on me because you could identify where in each quadrant you probably are today. And if you read it, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a powerful shift in thinking when you finally say, wait, like I now have all of my expenses covered and I'm making money passively, or, you know, even if it's slightly actively, but still it's not, you're not trading time for money, and how much that frees up your ability. I mean, that's, you know, if it was a graph, it would just, you could just see exponential growth once you've gotten over that initial hurdle. That was something even fun, not fun, because nothing about the pandemic was fun, but when the pandemic happened, you know, we had a business that was set up that was, it was still just kicking out money. And it was like, good. Well, you know, we took it on the chin on some other areas, but it was still in such a way that it was like, you know what? I'm not going to panic. We can retool what we're doing. And we felt very fortunate to be in that position because many, unfortunately, were not. So that's.
Well, let me build on that point. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, you're talking about from a business standpoint, but from a personal finance standpoint, you can't be ready if you don't get ready. And now is the time for people who are listening to this for the first time to get ready. Start thinking about what you can do in your personal finances and your education to be in a place where there's liquidity in your life, where there's income in your life. And I'm trying to do something different from others that are persuading people to start thinking about taking next steps. And I'm not trying to drive fear. Maybe, you know, hopefully I'm driving excitement for positioning yourself to where, you know, assets are paying you and, you know, there's more margin in your life, kind of like what you were just saying.
Yeah, exactly. More margin. I love that. How'd you put that again? You can't be ready if you don't get ready. How'd you put that?
Yeah, I just made that up. But yeah, you can't be ready for the unforeseen because none of us knows exactly what tomorrow's market or tomorrow's economy looks like if you're not, and you can't be ready if you're not already getting ready or being, getting yourself prepared or taking those next steps. coming up with a savings plan, coming up with an investing plan, you know, figuring out what expenses you can take out of your life and start figuring out, you know, what it takes to start creating passive income. And that takes education.
Sure does. Rodney, I've loved this. Final four questions for you are this. What is one tool or resource you find you can't live without?
Ooh, that's good. That is good. I'll just say, this is probably a general answer. I'd like to read, and the education is what gives me confidence. So I mean, I don't really read on my iPad or anything, but I like books. And then secondly, probably this iPad. So I got this iPad when I started this journey, and I do everything on it. So we're on a Zoom call right now with it. I keep my notes on it. I write my blog posts on it. You know, I write handwritten notes on it. It's amazing.
That's cool, man. Good for you. I love that. Question number two is this. When it comes to investing in real estate, what is one mistake you could help our listeners avoid?
I think the one mistake is being in a rush to just do anything. And, you know, I know I've spent a lot of time talking to passive investors, but I know active investors that are jumping into things, and I'm kind of watching because I have an opinion on some of these, you know, decisions and investments they're making, but I'm also, you know, jumping into the business myself and I'm learning. So I figure either way, I'm going to learn a lesson. I do think some people are overpaying based on what I'm seeing, and, you know, they're going to sacrifice cash flow today for a potential, you know, high sell 5 years from now. Everyone's got a 5-year plan. We don't know what 5 years from now looks like. What I am looking for is, like I said, I talked about margin in your personal life. I'm looking for cash flow and I'm looking for upside, but the ability to have a safe and comfortable investment as best as you can in this competitive environment. Right. So just kind of watching that right now.
Right. I love that. Question number three, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
So I'm having a mindset and I'm focusing on maintaining this mindset of investing in communities. So when I talk and when I write my blog posts about investing in the past, it was a lot about what we can do for investors, returns, growing wealth, forced appreciation, raising rents. And that last one really got me thinking, especially after I did an apartment tour and I went to the reviews and I saw what residents were saying about, you know, the community. It's like, I really want to make sure that we're thinking about the community and improving residents' lives, making it safe and comfortable for them to live. And then also not pricing the rent so high where we displace people that, you know, are good quality residents. Yeah. And that's something that I've been thinking a lot about.
That's fantastic. And that's certainly a balancing act. I think
all it is,
you know, how do we protect our investors' interests in quality asset and also protect your tenants' interests?
I mean, right.
In order to make a quality asset, you're going to have to at some point raise rents and bring in more revenue,
yep,
to make it a decent place to live. Otherwise, it just, things do not get better on their own. You know,
that's true.
It's a challenge, but, you know, kudos to you for thinking through that and really taking a long-term view on that. Rodney, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
So my website, which is my first name, last name, RodneyRobinsonSecond.com, is where I keep my blog. And if you go to the website, you'll obviously see the content, but I have a giveaway, which is a passive investor startup guide. Cool. It's a 5-part guide to what anyone can do to make that first passive investment. I'm also very active on LinkedIn. It's my first name, last name, second again, and then Instagram. So I'm sure all of that will be in the show notes.
Yep, absolutely. Rodney, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam. It was a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.